Welcome to Destination Hockey. In this second-to-last episode, I have a lot in store today. First, though, I have Harris Eisenberg on the show. For those of you who don't know, Harris Eisenberg has been on the show a few times, and he is certainly an interesting character. As the show is in its waning hours, and I will not be able to continue this show in college, at least for now, I want to go back to Harris one more time to start a new segment called How Full Is the Glass? And for those of you who are unaware, how full is the glass is something you say, the glass is half full, the glass is half empty. And Harris, first I'm going to speak with you, and then we're going to talk to Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy, who's also a big Islanders fan. And we're just going to talk about how positive should Islanders fans be. John Tavares is gone, but Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello are on board. So I ask, Harris, how full is the glass?
To be honest with you, I do think it's going to be a half-full glass to me. The team can put the puck in the net. I know we lost 37 goals, and I know we lost 84 points, but Matt Barzal was the guy who led the team in points last season, and even though he's going to be going up against other teams' number one guys, I do believe he'll still be able to get around the 80-point range, and other guys should have bounce-back seasons like Andrew Ladd. I do believe Andrew Ladd will score 20 goals this season, even though he's been horrific the last 2 years. I really do. Josh Hosang gets a fresh start, and I think the fourth line can contribute the way it did 3 years ago. We should be all right.
So one thing that you can look at as a negative for the Islanders is how many players they signed that will block the young kids. Why did the Islanders need to sign guys like Leo Komarov, like Kunackle, these guys that really don't add much to a team but are going to take up spots?
So the Komarov signing to me, the term is a little bit ridiculous, but I understand he's a character guy. He's going to help out some young kids. The other signings that we've had, Filppula, Kunackle, Kugar, and even, to be honest with you, trading for Matt Martin, is really blocking some guys like Ross Johnston and Michael Dalcol, Josh Hosang, guys that have been in the system for quite a while now, and you're replacing them with veterans just to basically evaluate where the team state is this season. I'm not really sure why they're here, to be honest with you. The Islanders have seven centers on their team now, so some of them either gotta go or they're gonna use it in trades. I really don't know why those guys were signed.
So Kiefer Bellows, he's one of the Islanders' top prospects, and he's really a guy who many people projected to take a big step this year, but there just doesn't seem to be a spot for him. Do you think he's going to make the team this year?
I think it's going to take 1 year in the AHL. I think he needs to turn pro to kind of figure his game out a little bit. He was great in junior, but the AHL, even though it's not the big show, he's got to perform there as well. He's got a ton of potential. He scored 50 goals for USA development camp the year before he got drafted, and it was great for Portland and WHL. But I think once he turns pro, he's got to prove himself, and I think it'll take a year before he gets a permanent spot on the roster.
So you think the AHL, but one problem is Seattle is having an expansion team coming in 3 years, and if Bellows moves to the AHL, he will be using up 1 year of his eligibility, thus he will be eligible to get claimed in the expansion draft. Do you think they should just keep him in the WHL if they're not going to keep him pro?
I think, and I do believe he's eligible. I do think they give him the 9-game trial and then they send him to junior. I don't believe he signed his entry-level deal yet, so he's not up for pro hockey. He can come to the Islanders whenever he wants or when he's ready. So the goal for the Islanders management is to keep him in junior as long as possible until he's ready, obviously with the expansion team coming, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think that bringing him to the AHL is kind of a waste because you have so many guys that really could fill AHL spots. Just keep Bellows in juniors and don't risk Seattle. And I did mention those guys that could fill AHL spots. You've got Ross Johnston, Tom Kunackle. Even Matt Martin is a guy who, is he an NHL talent? He wasn't last year. Who knows? Should Matt Martin be an everyday player at the NHL on that fourth line with Kyle Clutterbuck and Casey Cizikas?
It's going to start that way. Barry Trotz, obviously coach of the Washington Capitals the last 4 years, and he knows that Martin, Cizikas, and Clutterbuck were the top fourth line in hockey for the first 2 years that Trotz was in Washington while they were on the Islanders, but Martin had completely regressed as a hockey player, as an overall player, goal scoring wise, and killing penalties, playing defense, and there's other young guys that need opportunities. I think it's going to start with Martin Kazukas and Clutterbuck, and if it's not going well, then I don't see Matt Martin in the lineup full time this season.
Yeah, I just, with Matt Martin, he's a big hitter. He's can occasionally score, but his main thing is just his chemistry with Clutterbuck and Cizikas. If that doesn't work out, also Barry Trotz like to shake up lines. Do we see Cizikas in a Tom Wilson type role, possibly moving up to third line center, even second line center if Brock Nelson has a bad year? Who knows? I mean, I just don't know what Barry Trotz has in store. He was crazy in Washington. He had all these weird things he did. What do you think is going to happen with these line combinations? There's just so many guys. It's so difficult to project. Do you see, I mean, just what's going to happen with the Islanders this year? It's just such a confusing situation.
I do think that things are going to shift throughout the entire season. I believe that this upcoming season is a year of evaluation for the team. It's not necessarily about winning, but if they do, it would be nice. Obviously, Barzal is the top center on the team, but I do think Anthony Brevelio plays second-line center. He had a lot of success in junior at center. Hopefully they can develop his game at center at the NHL level also. You know, we don't even know if Andrew Ladd fits in properly or Josh Hosang. So there's going to be a lot of rotating going on. And it's going to be, fans should be very optimistic about what they're going to see this season.
Something that's difficult to be optimistic about, though, is the defense. Last year it was brutal, and now it only has gotten worse with Calvin DeHaan departing. However, Barry Trotz is coming in. He's implementing a new defensive system. Will the defense be able to hold up this season at an NHL level?
I think the defense will be slightly better, but it still may stay the same. In my opinion, you gotta hope that Noah Dobson can crack the lineup for a good chunk of the season, so he's in there, big body. He's going to throw his weight around. And if you've noticed, David, all the forwards that the Islanders signed are there for defensive purposes, hitting. What Lou has done is created an identity up front and on defense. Defense and offense, both big hitting forces for the team. And hopefully they can structure around a defensive identity and put some fear into the opponents while putting the puck in the net.
I like how he did that because the Islanders, perhaps their biggest issue last year, we spoke to Alex Nove, who was the Islanders statistician for The Athletic, and he said it wasn't as much the defense as it was Doug Weight, one of the worst coaches, a nice guy, but just one of the worst coaches I've ever seen in action. His system was just absolutely terrible. They couldn't clear the puck from their own zone. The forwards weren't able to get the puck to enter the zone. It was just a really bad system. So if the forwards can get it right, maybe that's just back to the defense, because last year was just god-awful, and we can't have that happen again.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, worst goals against, they gave up the most goals in a season for a long time. It was like a historic season how bad the defense was for the New York Islanders.
Yeah, it's just, the thing was last year, Calvin DeHaan was such a character guy, and I love Calvin DeHaan. I know we're currently live on Instagram as well. We are recording on Instagram as well as Facebook and live in the studio. We got a lot of platforms going today, and a lot of followers on Instagram, I know, don't like Calvin DeHaan. He's one of those guys that fans do not like. I've always loved the guy, and I think his departure is really going to hurt. 2 weeks ago on Destination Hockey, I interviewed Bob Wage, who's a writer for the Carolina Hurricanes, and he said the loss of Calvin DeHaan is really going to hurt for the Islanders. Do you think that's kind of overhyped and that Calvin DeHaan isn't that good of a player? It was just a coincidence that the team went downhill after his injury? Or do you think Calvin DeHaan's departure this season is really going to hurt?
I do think it's going to hurt. Not a lot, but, you know, a good amount. And obviously, I understand why the fans don't like him. He's made a lot of, in 15-16, he made a lot of mistakes. And he was probably one of, if not our worst defenseman in those 2 years. But once you got into 17-18, he kind of expanded his game a little bit to not only be a better defenseman, but he was pretty decent on the offensive side, too. I do believe that the price for Calvin DeHaan was a bit outrageous, even though he's only had, you know, 1.5 good seasons with him getting hurt most of last season. So I do think it's going to hurt the team a little bit, but if you get the right guys to step up, I think the defense is going
to... For those of you just tuning in, I'm talking to Harris Eisenberg. He's a Drive for Five writer, and he's been on the show a lot, and we're playing how full is the glass, because the Islanders, you could look at them and say, they're going to be a playoff team next year. They're fired off. They're fired up over John Tavares' departure. Or you can say the Islanders are a very bad hockey team. And one of the more divisive players on the Islanders is Brock Nelson. I know you don't like the guy. What are your thoughts on Brock Nelson? Do you think he's going to be able to partially replace John Tavares? And how do you feel about his contract?
Well, first of all, the only reason why Brock Nelson is still on this team is so that they could trade him at this year's deadline. If he was an unrestricted free agent, the Islanders would probably have no intent on re-signing him. Obviously, there are times where he does put the puck in the net, but unfortunately, those times are when it just doesn't matter, or the team is really struggling, and he's the only guy that's kind of helping out. And like you see the games where the Islanders lose 2-1 and 3-1, and it seems like it's always Brock Nelson that's scoring the only goal, and that stretch goes on for quite a while. So, and also you got to look at Brock Nelson. Where does he fit on this team? If Bogolyi is the second line center, you got Komarov and Valtteri Filppula, both centers that should be getting some regular time this season. Does Nelson move to the wing? I don't know. He's just got to put the puck in the net more consistently for him to have a shot at being like a real good force on this team.
Yeah, Brock Nelson's just a guy that he plays lazy. He doesn't back check. And again, one of those reasons why the Islanders, you know, defense and just the team defense wasn't good last year. He needs to have a big year. I feel like he's the type of player where if he just tries, like really hard, plays the game like Beauvillier does, like Barzal does, even though he's not the best defensive player, even though he does kill penalties, which means he is okay, he just needs to try harder, back check, shoot more, you know, work on his passes, just the little aspects of his game that right now he's not good at, he really needs to work on. Because if Brock Nelson just played the game at a really hard, intense level, I think he could be a good player.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, I've looked back on the last few years that Nelson's really had his good time here with the Islanders. And when he's scoring, which is he's a very streaky player, when he's scoring, he's one of the best shooters, most underrated shooters, I think, in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when he's on his game, he is a dominant offensive force. But it's just that, you know, defenses, he kind of struggles even strength. And, you know, he kind of gets a little bit of the blame, too, on defense. Don't not include Brock Nelson in the blame on defense. He definitely deserves some of it. But, yeah, he needs to have a big year. He needs to put up 25 goals, in my opinion, to either, A, get some good value for him, or B, in his personal lives, if he wants to get paid, have a good year, be consistent.
Or if he just played like it was the beauty league. I mean, every offseason, this guy goes up to Minnesota, I think, and just dominates this league with some talented players like Brock Besser, other players, Cam Atkinson. And he just, I mean, he dominates this league. He's one of the best players in this league every year. And then he comes, has a nice start to the season, and just completely dies out. It never fails. This guy does the same thing every year.
I mean, to be honest with you, it's the summer. I don't know if these guys are actually taking it so seriously that he's scoring all the goals in the beauty league. I wouldn't really look at that, to be honest with you, but you're right that he does have to start. And just look back to 14-15. Brock Nelson was a guy who had 14 goals going into the new year, and he didn't score a goal for 20 games until a game in Carolina. He only finished the season with 20. And it's been a stretch for a long time. 15-16, he just took down about 20 goals going into, I'd say, mid-February, and he only scored 6 the rest of the season. He didn't score 24 in the season, 2016-17 until the last year of the year, and then obviously he struggled last year. So it's just got to start scoring into the bunches.
Well, Harris, it's been a pleasure to speak with you. Unfortunately, it looks like this will be our last time speaking on Destination Hockey. Thank you so much for all the memories throughout the past year. It's been great to work with you and go to games together and even sleep over at your house one night. Thank you so much, Harris. I will talk to you soon.
Yeah, always good to have me on, David.
All right, see ya. Hi, how are you?
I'm well, David. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. For those of you tuning in right now, this is Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy. thank you so much for joining me today. So it's been a while since we've spoken. How's your summer been going?
You know, David, it's been going good. It's been a bit busy. I've gone back to school, taken some courses, a few classes, and I've actually met my certification and also graduated, and I am now a New York State Task Force chaplain. And I am in chaplaincy, which is something I've always wanted to do to help other people, and I can do it in a lot of different areas. So it's been busy, but it's been a good one and very rewarding.
Well, congratulations for that. It's great that you're able to do so much work for the community, and your main thing that you're known for around Destination Hockey, Drive for Five, and the Islanders community is definitely your just undevoted fandom to the New York Islanders. So you have season tickets every year. Have you purchased your tickets yet? How is it working with the Coliseum versus Barclays Center? And are you going to get tickets to both arena? What's the situation with that?
Yeah, so I've already clarified the tickets at the Coliseum, and I'll be over in section 27 in the corner, similar to the Barclays location. Unfortunately, the Islanders will be shooting twice the other way. But you know what? I've got that all taken care of, and I've got the same seats at Barclays. So between the two venues, I know exactly where I'm going, and I just cannot wait for the hockey season to start. It's been a long time, and I think I've got some withdrawal symptoms going on.
Yeah, me too. This is the worst time of the off season. It's August, nothing's happening, and just it's a terrible time in the Islanders' off season. But there's a lot of things to look forward to, and one thing that people aren't really realizing is that next year we're going to have tailgating. That's something that we haven't had for years in the Nassau Coliseum parking lot. How excited are you for that?
Oh, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am. It's something that every Islanders fan has grown up with. Tailgating has been a part of the culture of this organization, this history, this storage franchise for years. And when Brooklyn came along, that kind of disappeared. And, you know, we're going back to something that's very valuable to an Islander fan. So I can't wait. You know, I've already got my spot picked out, and I know where my seat's going to be, and I just wish it was tomorrow.
Yeah. The Islanders, they have this, you know, arena situation. They've got the Coliseum and the Barclays, and everyone seems to be looking forward to the Coliseum more just because of all the history there. So speaking of the history, what's your favorite tailgating memory? Because I'm sure you have many.
But actually, there's one that stands out. There was a blizzard quite a few years ago. I can't recall exactly when. I think we were playing Montreal, and it might have been a Saturday night. My daughter and I were destined to go to that game, and my wife said, "You can't go." I said, "No, we're going, and I'm meeting some friends there, and, you know, we already set this up." We got there, and, of course, there was just so much snow that the snowplow guys were good enough to come and just happened to be parking in that area, so they kind of plowed us and gave us a little spot. Well, anyway, we huddled underneath this, I guess, tent, which almost collapsed on us, and we spent the whole time there in the snow. It was ridiculous, but we were dedicated. We wanted to do it, and you know what? When we got into the game, there was 3,000 people there, but I don't even know the result of the game, but we had such a fantastic time. By the time we got out, another half foot of snow, but yeah, so many good memories, and that was one for sure.
Yeah, and the Islanders fan base, it's not large. I will be the first to admit the Islanders do not have the biggest fan base around. Sometimes we don't show up to games. Sometimes, you know, it's a little difficult. It's a little bit of a rocky relationship between the team and the fans. But there's this dense, just heartfelt, really passionate inner fan base that I know the Islanders have that is just better than perhaps any team in the league. Where do you rank the Islanders in terms of the most passionate fan base in the NHL?
Numbers out there, but the numbers we have are as passionate as there can possibly be. I have to tell you, I have, you know, it's funny how things work out. Taking the train to Brooklyn was sort of a roundabout way to go to a game over all these years. But in that journey, I met quite a few people and realized how passionate they are, and some people I've never met before. There's no doubt the Islander fan base is just absolutely passionate. I've run into some people on the somewhere out in Long Island on one of the roadways, and I bonked my horn, you know, let's go Islanders. Next thing I know, I get the response back in just a quick second. Boom, boom, boom. So, you know, Islander fans are very passionate. And yeah, they might be small in numbers, but I'll tell you, the fans we have are just as, you know, probably passionate more than in the NHL, in my opinion.
Yeah, and this offseason it was really shown. Islanders fans were rallying around this movement to try to get John Tavares, I'll say his name, is also known as the Snake, the Traitor. But the Islanders fans really wanted this guy to re-sign, and we showed it. We, Bagel Boss, I was talking to Daniel Rosner today. I was trying to get him to come on the show. Unfortunately, he's getting stitches right now, so best wishes to him. But we were talking to him about the bagel movement, about the cake, about all the free things that Islanders fans are trying to give him. All throughout Twitter, the billboard movement. just so many great movements that Islanders fans have done. How enjoyable is it for you as one of the most noticeable and passionate Islanders fans to see this fan base really go on these movements that really make changes?
You know, it's fantastic. It really shows the passion of the fans, the question you just asked me before. And, you know, Bengals are a part of symbolic of Long Island and part of their culture and their history. You know, Bengals are just like pizza. And so Bengals and pizza go hand in hand. You know, to show that kind of love from you know, ownership of a Bengals store and a fan base, really, it's tremendous. I mean, really, it kind of says a lot about Islander fans, and it talks about, you know, how much they really love Long Island and wish that John Tavares had stayed, but so we left, and we go from there.
And the Islanders' schedule, that's one thing that is unique just to the Islanders. They've got the two arenas, but another thing that I noticed about the Islanders' schedule, and I talked about this with Chris King a few weeks ago, they have a ton of afternoon games, more than I've ever seen on the schedule, and definitely something that's exciting for young fans. In terms of your favorite type of game, afternoon or night, which one do you like better?
Well, they're both a toss-up, and, you know, the afternoon game offers you a little bit different atmosphere. And again, it's a lot of the young kids that are coming in, and these kids like I was, and you were at one point, and we were all kids at one point, so these afternoon games were games that we were able to make. So there's some fond memories of every afternoon games, and certainly there's nothing wrong with them. And it gives you a little more time to, you know, kind of like get together with people and so forth. Night games are a little bit more regimented, but yet that's a culture that we've all been in. So night games are something we're used to. So it's a little bit of a divide between the two, but truthfully, they're both equally, you know, they're great. I mean, afternoon game is fine, and an evening game's good. So they're kind of split between the two.
And the Islanders' schedule also is unique. Both Rangers games are at Barclays. There's more time to get the Coliseum ready. The first game isn't until December. The rivalry games are all at Barclays, a lot of Western Conference games at the Coliseum, back-to-back games at different arenas, 3 and 4s, one game at the Islanders in Barclays, one game at the Islanders in the Coliseum. The schedule is really, really weird. We've never seen anything like it in the history of the NHL. So how do you like how the schedule makers put together the Islanders' schedule?
It took a little time to sort of absorb the whole schedule because it seemed a little odd. You know, what team plays in two arenas, right?
Yeah, I know.
So that's unusual. But I'll tell you, David, you know, I looked at the schedule and I kind of analyzed it a little bit. And as you noticed, and I know with Chris King you had this conversation a couple weeks ago, I was listening on that one. The Islanders are top-loaded on that last end of the season at the Coliseum. I believe all the games in March, I think the 28th of February is their last game at Brooklyn, and I believe that's when Toronto comes in, coincidentally. So, you know, if you think about it, if the Islanders are anywhere near any sort of a playoff possibility, imagine this storyline. The Coliseum is filled, and all those last, say, dozen games or whatever it might be are played in Nassau, back where they were, you know, a storied franchise. So, yeah, I mean, this could be something that could be big. But, you know, again, it's a little bit of an odd schedule. I think we just have to deal with it for now. But moving forward, and again, I don't know this for sure, but I'm thinking that most games are going to be at the Coliseum just so because that's better for the Islander organization and better for Barclays.
Yeah, and you hinted at these playoff atmosphere-type games towards the end of the season as the season's waning down and the Islanders are pushing for the playoffs. Do you think that's a realistic situation? Earlier on the show, I had Harris Eisenberg on, and we played this segment called Glass Half Full, Glass Half Empty, How Full is the Glass? And the Islanders are such a really interesting team because John Tavares is gone, but they've got a lot of young talent and new coach and new general manager. Do you think the Islanders are a potential playoff team this year?
Well, you know, I'm always a positive guy, and I'd love to say yes, because in my heart, I want to believe it's yes. Realistically, I'm not sure. You know, and you got to get this little thought. So you got Lou Lamoriello coming into this organization. Just look at what George McPhee did with Vegas last year. Look what he did for 17 years with the Capitals. So Lou is of the same mindset, and he's a guy who, you know, I don't know how he pulls these rabbits out of a hat, but he could just somehow get this team to rally. Some of those guys were really disappointing last year, Brock Nelson, and the list goes on and on, might just reach their potential. And if their potential is reached, and you had a couple of those young kids in there, and some of the veterans that he threw in, Matt Martin and so forth, who knows? You always have a chance, and you never know. But do I think they're honestly going to make the playoffs? It's a slim chance, but I'm very hopeful.
John Tavares, he's the guy that Islanders fans don't like to talk about. He's been completely dispelled from our memory, but I'm going to talk about him with you because not to, you know, give away some of our private emails, but I was actually pretty surprised with your reaction to John Tavares leaving. Usually you're a very positive guy, but you didn't have too many kind words about John Tavares. How hurt were you when John Tavares left?
Well, you know what? It comes down to just being a good citizen. And so if John Tavares had a childhood dream, which he's had his whole life, all right, so, you know, why would you be upfront with the organization? Why would you be upfront with the, you know, management and the ownership and all that, and just come out and say, look, you know, I'm kind of leaning this way because it's my dream. And I've always had this dream, and I don't want to disappoint you, but I don't want to leave you empty-handed. And he didn't do that, and that's where the problem lies, because now we have nothing in return, and he kind of kept us on pins and needles. And as you and I just spoke, you know, we shared some private emails, we were just devastated. And so, you know, I mean, look, moving forward, it is what it is. It'll open up some more salary cap for the Islanders, and the team will be just fine, but the way he went about it was extremely disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah, and just the devil's advocate side of this is that, I don't agree with this, but everyone was like, oh, the Islanders were in the heart of a playoff push. Everything was going downhill. John Tavares had to focus on his current team, and he couldn't even think, couldn't even allow himself to think about his future. Obviously, that's not a realistic thing to say, because John Tavares, it was clearly on his mind. It affected his play, and it affected the Islanders' locker room. But do you think that John Tavares just shouldn't have really cared about the Islanders' future, and that he should have just said, I want to go to Toronto, I'm going to focus on this year and not think about, you know, I don't want to get traded, I don't want to move? Like, is that a reasonable thought process from his part, or do you think that's a little bit showing signs of being a traitor?
Well, a traitor is a whole different story. Again, like I say, John Tavares should have come out early on, before the trade deadline, and made it very clear with the organization his intentions. He did not. And just so you know, traitor, a dictionary definition of a traitor, one who betrays another's trust or is false to an obligation or duty. So, unfortunately, John Tavares is a traitor.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you there. He, and again, Islanders fans, I'm live on Instagram right now recording this as well for the first time. And Islanders fans, one thing I've learned, I don't post about it, I don't write about it anymore, because I would just immediately get an intense amount of hate whenever I even mentioned the name John Tavares. But I want to talk about him now because you are one of the most popular and recognizable Islanders fans, and you have certainly some, you know, interesting opinions on this. John Tavares is a traitor, and I wrote a letter back to him that I posted online, and there's a lot of storylines here, but John Tavares betrayed the Islanders. That's something that happened, and I think it tarnishes his legacy. He went from being a top guy in this franchise right behind the likes of Bossy and Potvin, a guy that I know you really like, Dennis Potvin, but he just went from one of those guys to someone who really, really let this team down. Where do you view his legacy now in terms of the entire NHL Islanders legends now that he left the Islanders?
So from an Islander point of view, you definitely know he's a traitor. He disappointed you, and you almost hate him. You don't want to use those words, but you certainly don't like him. You know, from outside in the NHL, and again, this is maybe just the way business is done in this day and age. If you notice that with the, you know, we had the strike season a couple of years back, and then we came up with some sort of a salary gap and the owners and the players and so forth. Maybe this is just the way hockey's done. I just don't understand. Again, it really bothered me was that John Tavares just couldn't be upfront with everybody from the beginning. Had he done that, there'd be no problems. So is this tarnished legacy tarnished? Tarnished, I'm sorry, yes, I think so. I mean, certainly from my point of view and from my other point of view, you know, other people out there from the NHL might think differently and just say, well, he was never on a good team and he wanted to leave. But, you know, it's just the way he went about it that really, I guess, really tarnishes his legacy right there.
How do you compare him to a Kevin Durant-type figure? Kevin Durant, NBA superstar, left the Oklahoma City Thunder and Russell Westbrook to join one of the best teams in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors, and he has won championships with them since. How do you compare him to Kevin Durant?
Well, I'm not a basketball guy, but, I mean, listen, as an individual, when you play a sport and you only have so many years of shelf life, so to speak, you want to win a championship, and I do understand. And one of the things I have to say, honestly, John Tavares never really had the support behind him. For all these years he's with the Islanders, he never had the guys around him. So, you know, it doesn't excuse him from what he's doing. you know, listen, that's something he did. He needed to reach out to that dream. And you know what? God bless him. And you know what? John Tavares, he's got to figure out, in his own mind, he's got to go to bed every night. Did he do the right thing with the Islander organization? Did he do the right thing with the fans, the ownership, the management? And I think he knows he did. And that's the sad part. Again, like I said, if he had just gone about this the right way, it would have been fine. But he's a traitor.
How do you feel about his Players Tribune article where he apologized to Islanders fans and really gave a heartfelt message, but he also, in his apology letter, discussed his dream of always wanting to be a Maple Leaf and how his memories of being a fan when he was younger. How do you think he did that, and was that done in the correct way?
No, I don't think it was. And again, there's no hatred towards Sean Tavares here. Let's be realistic. You know, the guy made a decision. It was, you know, for his best sake. It was the way he went about it. I don't know. You know, to tell you the truth, I wish he would have just come to everybody outright and said, listen, I'm leaving, I have a dream, and I want to go somewhere else. But again, when you leave the franchise in that way, it just, it not only tarnishes your, you know, credibility, it makes you sour grapes with Islander fans. I mean, I can't even imagine what's going to happen here on February 28th when he comes back to the Barclays. Nevertheless, the March game at the Coliseum.
Yeah, so how do you feel about John Tavares' return? Do you have any sign ideas planned for when he comes back? Because I know that you could take a positive route and give a classic thank you, John Tavares, sign. Because one thing that's important is John Tavares gave us so much. He was a very quiet yet really passionate and important leader for this franchise, and he really did give the Islanders some great memories. Are you going to go with a thank you, John Tavares, sign, or are you thinking something a little more negative, or how are you going to welcome him back to the Coliseum and Barclays Center?
So I think a little time will heal everything. So it'll come to me when we get to that point. So that's many, many months away. You know, right now I'm a little bit upset that he left and all, but I'm not really sure. I don't think I'd take that welcome back thing or good luck or anything. I think I'd go more towards the traitor side because really what he did with the fan base is just horrendous. I mean, you know, you leave this organization with nothing and, you know, why not just come out front, you know? So I'm not really sure about that, David. That's a good question. I'll have to give that a little thought and be careful about making sure that I do what's probably the right thing, but do it fairly.
Yep, great talk about John Tavares. We spent 5 minutes talking about him, probably 5 minutes too many, but let's move on to some of the positives. Matt Barzal, he's the franchise cornerstone. He's the number one center. He's an elite young talent. Is he ready to replace number 91 and become the top guy for the New York Islanders?
He is. He's going to face a different personnel against him on a daily basis, so it's going to be a little more difficult for him, but I think he's the guy that's ready for it. He's got just that desire within him. He's got that, everything about him. He has what you would like in any NHL player who is a top player. He has the knowledge, the ability, he has the know-how, he has everything in him given. He is going to be fantastic. So, yes, it's going to be a challenge, but I think he's going to ace that, and he's going to do very, very well.
Just so many stories I have to share about Barzal. I'll give a quick one. It was the Islanders-Flyers preseason game in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Barzal was skating out onto warm-ups, and I figured I'd throw the question and ask him for an autograph while he was skating out to warm-ups, which obviously was ridiculous. He couldn't do that. But what does he do? He stops. He says, I can't give an autograph now, but I'll get you one on the way back. So I'm like, okay, there's no way he does that. I mean, this guy is warming up for an NHL game. So what does he do? He takes his warm-ups, and then he skates back. And at this point, I got boxed out by Flyers fans. So what does he do? He stops. When he exits the ice, he looks up. He finds me. He puts his hand up. I toss him the puck. He signs it, and then he tosses it back. I have a video of it and everything. This guy is just the epitome of class. He is a really humble and talented young kid. I just love Matt Barzal, not just as a player, but as a potential future captain and as a leader of this team. He's not a Connor McDavid-type leader where he's a quiet guy and just a lead by example. He's a talented player, but he's also a really vocal, popular, young kid that really could lead the Islanders in the future. And I am just so excited about his potential, and I think he's going to be better than John Tavares and just up there within the rafters with Potvin and the other guys, because I just think that Matt Barzal, it doesn't get better than him. He was an amazing draft pick, one of Garth Snow's, if not his best move, to trade up for him. It was a beautiful trade, and I think Matt Barzal is just going to be one of the greatest players in Islanders history. And it's a lot to say, but I see it happening.
Yes, I do. I agree with you 100%. You know, barring any kind of injury, this guy is going to be just a legend as we speak. So yeah, I'm excited about him getting on the ice there. He's gonna fill those skates that John Tavares is leaving.
Yeah, I completely agree.
We're in good hands, and again, you know, I'm always positive, but you know, Matty Bergeron, you know, you watch him in person and you see what this guy does on the ice. It's unbelievable. So we got the right guy at the place.
It's like he's a cheat code. I've never seen a player skate faster, skate in more weird and crazy ways, yet somehow end up putting the puck in the net. We were at the Detroit game, and you were at the Winnipeg game as well. When Matt Barzal had that hat trick, it was just amazing how he was able to find the puck. And in that Detroit game, on the power play, he's a point man. He's a down in the corner. He is absolutely fantastic on the power play, and just everything seems to feed off him. He sets up Brock Nelson for that game-winning goal, someone he doesn't even play with. Matt Barzal is just a playmaker, a scorer. He's getting better at defense. He's an amazing skater. There is just nothing wrong with this kid. I am just so excited for Matt Barzal to take over this team, and I think the Islanders are going to be better off without John Tavares solely because they have Matt Barzal's waiting in the rafters.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. Listen, you know, one player can always be replaced, and sometimes in sports there may be one or two particular figures, like, say, Brady for the Patriots. You know, here's a guy who really is that good. Mm-hmm. If he was not there, who knows? But I'll tell you, listen, Barzal's the man. He's going to take those Islanders. He's going to take shoes of John Tavares, the skates, and he's going to be very impressive, and he's going to do his job, and we're going to be psyched, and we're going to move on from John Tavares. That's important to know that.
Yep, and last season, it was certainly a roller coaster. So much promise. December 1st hit, that Ottawa Senators game, I always think of that as the downfall. Everything went wrong after that. John Tavares started to become a distraction. Injuries hit, and really just the season went downhill. It was a roller coaster. It was a crazy year. But what was your favorite memory of the season?
Well, David, when I met you that night back in February, I believe it was the night, and that was that Red Wings game where they were down by so many goals. They came back to win that one 7-6, and, you know, in reality, they were down by so many in the third period, it was just almost unlikely that they possibly could make that comeback. But it was really, really, if actually go back to and watch the highlights, it's remarkable what they did in a short time there. So that was probably my favorite moment for sure.
Yeah, that was just an absolutely crazy experience. I was moving around all over that game because a lot of Islanders fans left after that first and second period. The arena was completely empty, and it was a lot of Red Wings fans, and I was surrounded by Red Wings fans. Red Wings are a popular fan base. They really travel well, and I was just amazed at that fan base. You know, it seemed like everything was going wrong, and then bam, the four power play goals, the Brock Nelson overtime winner, the hat trick. It was the craziest game I've been to. My favorite memory as an Islanders fan, above the John Tavares overtime winners. Just, it was fantastic, and it was an out-of-body experience. I've never said that about anything in my life, but when I was at that game, it felt like I was standing on top of the scoreboard, looking down on it, just witnessing history. It was the greatest game of the season. NHL ranked it. It was the greatest game of the season. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And it was, in my opinion, one of the greatest games in franchise history because it was just absolutely amazing to watch this team that was counted out of it. They switched the goalie. They had the power play. And they just scored four goals and absolutely dominated that game. It was fantastic to watch. And I definitely agree with you. That was definitely my favorite moment.
Yeah, mine also.
So the offseason, that was an interesting, again, a roller coaster of a time period. You have Lou Lamoriello coming on board, and then you've got Barry Trotz, and you're thinking the triple crown is set. You re-sign John Tavares, you add a defenseman. The Islanders are an elite team with this roster, you think. But John Tavares leaves, and everything seems to be kind of weird now. What was your favorite memory of the offseason? Was it Barry Trotz, was it Lou Lamoriello, or was it some of those free agent signings?
I would say it's probably Lou Lamoriello, number one. And then when he came on board, you know, then he brought Barry Trotz, and he brought his assistant coach, Lane Lambert, John Gruden, and Scott Gomez-Davis. And then they changed the goaltending, you know, personnel. So director of goaltending becomes Mitch Cohen. And then they get a new goalie coach there. I mean, listen, these are really prominent coaches and people, that personnel at that level of NHL hockey that are running the show for the Islanders. It's something they've never had before. And again, I stress that they've never had this kind of, you know, strength in coaching and strategy. So we're really in a good place here. And, you know, disappointing, of course, John Tavares leaves. We know that. Well, you know, come on. We shared some emails. It was disappointing. But I'll tell you what, we have to move on with this new coaching staff, Lou Lamoriello. Again, look what George McPhee just did with Vegas last year. Look what he did for 17 years with Washington.
I completely agree with you. We're running out of time here. Again, this is Patrick Dowd for those of you watching on Instagram Live and listening live on the radio. Patrick Dowd has been on the show various times throughout the years. I remember when I came up to you at the Detroit game, I was thinking, I did this with Shannon Hogan, I did this with Brendan Burke, none of them have gotten back to me yet, and you were so enthusiastic to come on the show. I gave you my card, and since then, it's really been a nice relationship, and I'm so glad I've been able to have you on the show and talk to you and learn so much. You really changed my perspective about the Islanders. I started off a little negative, and you really got me thinking it's always better to be positive. So I just want to thank you so much. I'm looking forward to meeting you at games next year, tailgating, and really continuing, you know, to share this Islanders fandom together. I'll be at Hofstra really close, a block away, so I'm really excited. So once again, just thank you so much for everything you've done for this show, and thank you for being an avid listener, and it's just been nice to know you this year, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Well, listen, David, thank you, and I just want to put a couple of 2 cents in for you also. When I met you, you know, we've had this relationship on the show, and I know you have so much ability. I truly believe in my heart that, especially going to Hofstra where you're at, I mean, the connections with the Islanders here, I wouldn't be surprised if I see you somewhere on the radio soon doing this radio show again, and hopefully I'll be one of your guests when you become all big. And also, I think you're going to, you have a great career ahead of you, and I'm really proud to be a part of this venture, and I hope that as you move forward, you'll consider me to be on your shows. But, you know, we're always going to see each other at the Coliseum. We'll keep in contact, and we'll do some tailgating. And until that time, I want to thank you, and it was a pleasure being on the show.
Well, thank you so much. I really am excited for next hockey season. The Barclays Center, the Nassau Coliseum. A lot of negatives to look at with that, but I think it's going to be great. I mean, two arenas is better than one. We're going to have a lot of fun tailgating while also taking that trip into Brooklyn. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I look forward to staying in touch and going to games, and it's just going to be a lot of fun next year. So thank you so much for coming on the show today, and I'll definitely talk to you soon.
Thank you, David. I look forward to catching up with you soon.
Of course. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. I am here with a very special guest, Alex Thomas, who covers the Edmonton Oilers. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So the Edmonton Oilers, they're a really interesting team, perhaps one of the most interesting teams that I've focused on Destination Hockey, just because last season they had so many high expectations and were even predicted by a lot of people to win the President's Trophy. They certainly didn't do that. They had a lot of struggles. So what exactly went wrong last year?
I mean, everything outside of Connor McDavid went wrong last year, and it was just such a 180 from 2016-17 where nobody was hurt. Everything went right. It seemed like the bounces were always going Edmonton's way, and last year it seemed like they got no bounces. There were a ton of injuries, especially on the back end. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the defense, but the roster's not very good. Well, it's the identical roster to 16-17. The only difference is, and unfortunately, this is going to be something that's going to be a problem this year. Andre Sekera was hurt for a large portion of the year and struggled, and he came back predictably off of a big injury. Oscar Klefbom was hurt all year long, played through a bad shoulder injury, ended up getting shut down late in the year. Adam Larson had just a real tough season off the ice with the passing of his father in the middle of the year. He missed a long chunk of time. He battled injury early in the season, and he never really got going. And when those three, you know, those are their three best defensemen. When they're all battling injuries and they're not in the lineup, the team looks a lot worse. Cam Talbot struggled as a result. Matt Benning struggled moving up the depth chart as a result. Chris Russell struggled. They couldn't get the puck up to the forward. Any line that did have McDavid on it struggled. You know, that was really shown by Milan Lucic going from 50 points down into the 30s and having, I would say, the worst season of his NHL career. Everything just went wrong for this team last year. I don't think they were as good as 16-17, but I certainly don't think they're as bad as what the 2017-18 season showed.
One change that did happen, though, was Jordan Eberle left the team, and that was really a big loss for the Oilers and a big addition for the Islanders. Ryan Strome came over. Tough transition for him. What has been the thought process behind these one-for-one deals made by Peter Chiarelli? And I know you can't read his mind, but the Larson for Hall trade and then the Eberle for Strome, what was going through his head when he made those two deals?
Well, and he ended up filling two holes with the deal. The problem is they just overpaid so greatly. I mean, you know, everybody knows how bad the Oilers defense was. You know, when they drafted Hall in 2010, there's a reason they were in position to pick him. You know, in Drouin's tenure at Edmonton, they never had the defense group and the veteran group around those young forwards that could rather than take them into the playoffs. They needed a top four right shot D, and Adam Larson is a top four right shot defenseman. There's no doubt about that. But just like Shirelli did a lot in Boston, he overpaid for the player. He gave up the MVP last year in Taylor Hall, and you know that ended up being a trade that I think a lot of people from the get go didn't like. You look at the Strome for Eberle trade, and you know Jordan Eberle was coming off his one of his worst seasons in Edmonton, but he still managed 50 points with a horrible shooting percentage. I think everybody in Edmonton knew he was going to bounce back, and unfortunately, Shirelli decided that a third-line center was a priority, and it was a hole in 16-17. Their center depth is a reason they didn't get by Anaheim in the second round, but they overpaid again to fill that hole, and now you look in wing is a huge hole on this team, and arguably it's the weakest position. You know, Jesper Jarvi and Kyler Yamamoto are two guys that a lot of people think are going to step into that role, but you know, they're not shoo-ins right now. You can't sit here and say that those two are going to produce, you know, 40 to 50 points like Eberle was a shoo-in for every single year here. They overpaid. I mean, I like both those players, but they paid too dearly for them.
So when will Peter Chiarelli pay the price? Is he going to potentially lose his job if things go south in Edmonton this year, or will he continue to have this really long leash?
Well, I think the leash is very short already. I thought that there was a chance that he was going to get fired after the season, the way things went. And, you know, the fan base has been through a lot. They have. And, you know, there was a real sense of, okay, all the pain from that decade of no playoffs and bottom feeding teams every year was over. You know, they made the playoffs in 2017. They won a round. You know, there were some bad calls in Game 5 that went against them, and Anaheim ended up winning that game. And a lot of people think, you know, things go a different way in that one. Edmonton's in the Western Conference Finals. So, you know, there was a lot of hope going into last year, and it was just so bad, and the holes were so predictable. In the summer, you knew Andre Sekera was not going to be ready to go before the entry draft in 2017. The Eberle trade, I think everybody knew that made the offense work. They bought out Benoit Pouliot. A lot of the issues on that team were self-inflicted from management. And when they did say that he would be back, it really wasn't a vote of confidence from Bob Nicholson, the CEO of the Oilers. So I think if they struggle again this year, there's no way Peter Chiarelli is the general manager of Edmonton next season. I think they have to make the playoffs for him to keep his job. Or if they miss, they have to suffer catastrophic injuries a la McDavid and Draisaitl, both missing significant time, because this team should not be missing the playoffs at this point. It's McDavid's fourth year. The excuses are pretty much up. This is supposed to be a five-year plan for Chiarelli. If they're still missing the playoffs in year four with the best player in the game, I'm not sure how he can keep his job.
Well, one reason they did miss the playoffs was that defense, and we've talked about it a little bit. But it wasn't just that the defense was weak. It was that Andre Sekera, who was brought in to really fill a hole, has just had devastating injuries. He might not even be back in an NHL uniform again, just with how terrible these injuries have been. Just how devastating is this for the team, though? Sekera, outsiders don't really view him as that good of a player. He's just one of those guys. But in Edmonton, he's really an important player. So how bad is this injury for the Edmonton Oilers team as a whole?
You know, it's funny you mentioned how people outside of Edmonton don't view Sekera that way. There's a large portion of the Oilers fan base that I don't think recognizes how important he is to the team. I think a lot of people are quick to give Chris Russell more of the praise because he's more of a blue-collar, block-the-shot, physical player that the fan base kind of resonates with. But Sekera is a huge loss. I mean, you look at what the Oilers did this offseason. They were banking on Klefbom, Larson, and Sekera coming back healthy. That's not the worst bet in the world, but that bet's already blown, and we're not even in September yet because of Sekera's freak injury. I don't think you can count on him at whatsoever going into next season. At the earliest, he comes back in February, it sounds like, on the timetable. And judging by the way he played when he came back last year around Christmas time, expecting him to play even as a number 5 or 6 defenseman is probably asking too much of him right now. So, you know, the Oilers have shown interest in other defensemen. They talked a lot with Boston around the draft with Torrey Krug, and that rumor never seems to go away. And, you know, Boston's got 8 NHL defensemen heading into camp. Will something happen there? Justin Falk is still a Carolina Hurricane. Will something happen there? They signed Jakub Jarabek from the Capitals last week in kind of a response to the injury. But, you know, what is that really going to do? That's just a depth piece and another 5th or 6th defenseman. So that's a huge hole. And as hard as I am on Straley, I don't sympathize with this situation. In the sense where I don't wish this situation on anybody, because when you lose a top four defenseman like this, in this spot, man, that's hard to replace that guy in late August.
Yeah, the thing is, though, with the Torey Crew rumors, the Justin Falk rumors, and this is where it's tough for Peter Chiarelli, and I think one of the reasons why he made these crazy deals for Eberle and for Hall, you know, getting rid of those players, the Oilers' organizational depth just isn't there. If they were to go out for Justin Falk or go out for Torey Krug, who would they trade? Would they trade their best winger in Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Would they trade, you know, a defenseman like Darnell Nurse? They really don't have many players. They don't have a lot of draft picks that have succeeded. If the Oilers were to make a trade, I mean, who would they give up? They're just so weak, I'd say, in their organizational depth.
They have a couple of pieces, but it's just a matter of, do you want to get those pieces up? I mean, they've been looking for a right shot defenseman that can move the puck and be a weapon on the power play for as long as I can remember. And I'm not sure Justin Falk is that guy. Obviously, he can move the puck and play on the power play. I'm not sure if he's a top four, 5-on-5 guy anymore, the way he's played the last couple of years in Carolina. But they think they've drafted that guy in Evan Bouchard, and they're not going to move him. I don't think they're going to move Kyler Yamamoto after the way he performed the training camp last year and into the regular season. I think Jesse Puljujärvi could be out there a little bit, but Peter Chiarelli has had nothing but good things to say about him this offseason, and all the rumblings in the organization are, they're really happy with what he's done. So they do have some young pieces, but they're just not willing to move them right now. But, it's interesting when you look at a team like Boston. As we talk about Torey Krug, and you look at the young talent infusion that Bruins organization has had this last year and a half, a big part of it was their director of scouting at the time, and that was Keith Gretzky, now Chiarelli's right-hand man as the assistant GM in Edmonton. And if you look at the way the Oilers have drafted and Chiarelli's come in, this past draft, they had they only had a couple of picks, but they made some strong selections. The 2017 draft has some great arrows to it, as does 2016. In 2015, but those guys just aren't quite there yet. So they do have some things coming up in the system, but I'm just not sure if those pieces have developed enough to be the trade chips that they're looking for. They really don't have a ton to work with right now, and that's the unfortunate reality.
So I am live on Instagram Live right now with a lot of Islanders fans watching, and one question I do have for you, it's going a little off topic, but I do want to ask it because someone commented. Noah Dobson is an Islanders prospect right now, and he's a really solid defensive prospect. Do you think the Oilers should have drafted him instead of going the route they did?
It's funny. On draft day, my top choice was Oliver Wahlstrom, another Islanders first round.
Oh, yeah.
Noah Dobson was, when we got the pick 10 and Edmonton's got the pick of all three of them, my thought was, okay, they can't lose with either of these picks, so I'll be happy with any one of them. I was leaning towards Wahlstrom. I think Dobson and Bouchard are neck and neck. I would have been thrilled with either one of them. Watching Dobson at the Memorial Cup was a treat, and I didn't think he was going to fall to 10. So I go back and forth. I think Bouchard fits Edmonton really well, being that right shot D who can move the puck and play on the power play, but they drafted Noah Dobson. I could have seen him filling that role too. I think they're both going to be. I think they both fell beyond where they should have been picked. I think they're both top 6-7 prospects out of this draft.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the Islanders fans listening will be happy to answer that. And another question revolving around the Islanders is definitely some player that you have that Islanders fans are certainly familiar with. That's Ryan Strome. And he's a guy that Islanders fans know quite well. He had a 50-point year in his rookie season, and since then has just fallen off a cliff. Garth Snow was able to save face and acquire Jordan Eberle for him. But Ryan Strome's a big piece in Edmonton, and they really need him to rebound. Do you think it's possible, or do you think this guy is just a struggling prospect?
I think he was lost in the sense where, where he was drafted, you kind of more than a third-line center, right? In the top five, you would expect him to come out and be a guy who's going to put up, 70 to 80 points a year and be an offensive difference maker. But the reality is, he's not that player. And Peter Chiarelli, he kind of admitted that. Him and Todd McClellan both admitted that about midway through the season that they were fooled by Ryan Strome's rookie year. And, this is such a weird thing to say about a player you traded for, that they were kind of fooled by Strome's rookie year and by his draft pedigree. And they tried to put him on Connor McDavid's wing, and it just didn't work. They tried to play him in different places. He was was on Drysdale's wing for a while, and he had a nice little run. But that didn't last because they moved Drysdale back up to McDavid. They put him with Nugent Hopkins instead. And finally, about midway through the season, they put him on the third line. They let him be the center and said, this is what we're going to do. And in those last 48 games, I thought Strom fit in very well in that spot. He was a good third-line center for the team. You trusted defensively that they were going to be strong when they were out on the ice. And really, that's all you need behind McDavid and Drysdale down the middle. He's not going to be that top-line forward. He's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be a top-six center. But as a third-line center, I think he has fit a role with the Oilers. I think they acknowledge that the trade they overpaid for. But I think they found a role for him. He looks comfortable in that role. The team is more comfortable having him in that role. And I think that's the position you're going to see for him moving forward.
And how about Milan Lucic? Can he also recover?
You know, I think Lucic's numbers and the eye test tell a different story. And, you know, I am a numbers guy, but watching the Oilers this year, there were so many open nets that Lucic just banned on. There were so many posts that he hit, great saves that the goaltender made. I would be surprised if he's not in the 45 to 50 point range scoring 20 goals this coming season. He was good for them up until Christmas, and then when things started to snowball in early January on the ice and he got into a slump, he never could get it back. He went through something like this in the 09-10 season in Boston, rebounded nicely in 2010-11, and the Bruins ended up winning the Stanley Cup. So I'd like to see him rebound. I think he can rebound and be a 50-point second-line winger playing with Leon Draisaitl this year.
Along with covering the Oilers, and this will be our last question, we're running out of time here, but along with covering the Oilers, you do some college hockey broadcasting, and that's something we've talked about on the show as kind of an underappreciated part of this sport. So just how special is hockey at the college level?
Especially in Boston, where you have BC, BU, Harvard, Northeastern. You know, so many great pros have come from those schools, and you know, Adam Gaudette won the Hobie Baker last year, and he went right to the NHL, and I think it's so underappreciated because Major Junior gets all the attention. But if you look at the NHL draft in the last 4 to 5 years, you'll see a sharp increase in college players and Americans getting drafted and getting drafted early. You know, there's some unbelievable talent, and it's a heck of a lot cheaper than going to an NHL game too. So, yeah, for me, I think college hockey has become much more important. You know, it's not just the you know, as they call them around here, the Rugrats snipers, where it's, you know, 5'7", you know, Nathan Gerby and you know, Brian Gionta and Johnny Gaudreau. It's not just those players anymore. You know, you've got a lot of skill still, but you've got a lot of NHL-ready players, and it's a different game now. And personally, I think it's a higher level than some of the major junior stuff that you see out there. It's underappreciated, but, you know, it's especially in this area. I know they have a couple of games at MSG in the fall and into the winter, and it's a good take. It's an NHL game, and it's a good take.
I had Sean Grandi on the show earlier. He's a reporter now for the Boston Celtics. He does their radio broadcast. He used to do college hockey. I think he did Northeastern, and he also did ESPN Frozen Four coverage. He told me a story that it was one of the best games he's ever seen. I forget exactly what year it was, but in the middle of overtime, they switched from that to a baseball game, and they missed the overtime winning goal. It's just a story like that that exemplifies college hockey. I really hope in the coming years it gets some more coverage because it truly is an amazing part of the sport.
And I'll tell you what, the atmosphere in some of those arenas, whether it's, you know, I do a lot of games at Matthews at Northeast University, or whether it's the Coffee Forum in D.C., some of the atmospheres, and it's just, it's intense. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was a pleasure to speak with you. It was nice to talk about college hockey and also the Edmonton Oilers. So thank you so much, and I hope we stay in touch.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. So, guys, that was this week's episode of Destination Hockey. I would like to welcome back our Instagram Live audience. We've never done this before, but it's been a blast to have some Instagram followers on Drive for Five. Drive 4 with the number 4 and 5 with the letters spelled out. It's been a blast to have some followers shooting questions at us, talking with Patrick Dowd, who's one of the biggest Islanders fans around. It's been a pleasure to have, you know, everyone join the show and everyone listen. Patrick Dowd said it best. The Islanders are a team with a lot of potential, and this season, while Destination Hockey won't be going on for now at least, while I head to college, at least we know the New York Islanders have this potential and this future that really, really is just going to be fantastic. So guys, again, Harris Eisenberg joined first, then Patrick Dowd, and then Alex Thomas. That was our schedule today, and next week we've got some two Islanders legends coming on. I won't spill the beans on who they are, but stay tuned. Next week is going to be fantastic in our last week of Destination Hockey. So I hope everyone has a good night. Thank you for joining on the radio and also on Instagram Live. Have a great day, everyone.